Support for the Double Dome podcast comes from the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University, where students become geeks, an acronym for globally aware, ethical decision makers, engaged with the business community, knowledgeable to compete, and successful in business and life. More information at troy.edu/business.
The opinions expressed on this program represent the viewpoints of individual authors or contributors and do not necessarily reflect those of Troy University. This is eConversations, a joint production of Troy Trojan Vision and the Manuel H. Johnson Center for Political Economy. Now, here's your host, Dr. Dan Sutter.
Hello and welcome to eConversations. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Sutter of the Johnson Center for Political Economy at Troy University. No one wants to be operated on by a surgeon who didn't go to medical school or have their teeth drilled by an amateur dentist. We need to take in the expertise of specialists in our daily lives, but by definition, people are going to lack the knowledge to evaluate for ourselves whether alleged experts are truly competent. Occupational licensing is the means by which we turn to government to ensure the expertise of professionals. But licensing today extends far beyond fields like medicine or dentistry, and it's estimated that 1/5 of the American workforce now requires licensing, which has also been called a government permission slip to work. How do economists measure the extent of licensing in the modern workplace, and what states license the most occupations? Joining me on eConversations today is an alum of the Johnson Center, Dr. Noah Trudeau. Noah majored in economics at Jacksonville State before earning a master's degree here at Troy and then going on to get a PhD from West Virginia University, where he was the first of our master's alums to actually earn a PhD. Dr. Trudeau then returned to Troy as a professor of data analytics in 2023. Today we'll be talking about his work with the Archbridge Institute on their State Occupational Licensing Index, which was co-authored with Edward Timmons. Welcome back to the show, Noah.
Thanks, Dan.
And so let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about this project that you have, just in very broad terms, and then we'll get into some of the details about occupational licensing. But you and tell us how you got into being interested in occupational licensing in the first place.
Yeah, so my interest in occupational licensing actually started while I was a student here at Troy. I believe we did an eConversations episode on it. I was talking about licensing of funeral directors. That was my first foray into the occupational licensing environment. I co-authored a paper with then Professor Dan Smith, who's now moved on to Middle Tennessee, and that was my intro into occupational licensing while I was a student at West Virginia. That paper that I co-authored went under review and then was eventually published. And I later found out that one of the reviewers was Professor Ed Timmons, who is he's like the godfather of the occupational licensing environment. Ed is wonderful. Prolific author in the occupational licensing space now. He is the director of the Knee Center, the Knee Regulatory Research Center. They've recently rebranded. They focus on occupational licensing, scope of practice, and certificate of need laws. So they work in occupational regulation across all environments. As I was studying at West Virginia, I was looking to have an advisor and an outside committee member for my dissertation. So having met Ed and becoming friends with him, he was working at St. Francis University at the time, and I said, Ed, I need an outside committee member. You are the guy. Would you be willing to sit on my committee? Mm-hmm. And Ed said, absolutely. I'd be happy to. Be happy to advise in this. That led to us working more together. And then, as I was a senior at West Virginia, or a fifth-year grad student looking at the job market, I guess, the center that he is the director of moved to West Virginia University. So we started to work a lot more in tandem, and he got to know a little bit more of my interests. And one of those interests that I have is with occupational licensing. Unlike things like a driver's license, which is very standardized across states, you can take your driver's license to another state, you can drive your car in other states. Occupational licenses are not that simple. So sometimes becoming a plumber in Alabama means that you can't be a plumber in Georgia, or you can't be a plumber in Florida or Mississippi or Tennessee. Some states have what we call reciprocity. Some states have universal recognition. Mm-hmm. But one of the other things that kind of runs into this is states define occupation slightly differently. So there's no standard definition for what is an electrician, what is a physician, what is a dentist, technically. There are some colloquially understood definitions. But one of the complications we run into is it's kind of left up to each state how they define these occupations. And one question that I've always had, and Ed agreed with me, was if you were to look at every state and try to kind of put them on a scale together of who is the strictest about licensing in general, how would you go about it? And what ultimately would be the results? So we have ideas. A lot of people will compare very like strict definition of occupations across, and we can look at like different barriers for an occupation, but we wanted a general idea of occupational licensing as a whole across all of the states. And so that's what we've tried to answer with this index.
And so it started with the case of people like dentists or doctors, and clearly, you know, I mean, it's a matter of life and death if your doctor actually knows what they did, or if they, as the commercial suggests, they just stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But we've seen occupational licensing spread to a lot of other occupations that are not nearly as, you know, in a sense, professional, or the kind of thing that you need to go to graduate or professional school for. And things like, even like being a florist is licensed, at least I think in one state, right? So tell us a little bit about this spread to these other occupations where you think like, well, maybe you need to know something about hair, cutting hair, but I don't know, do you really need to go to a lot of training to try and become a barber?
Right, so the rationale for occupational licensing is it's exclusively thought of in the service aspect. You can't verify the quality of a service until you've received that service. And so you'd really like to know that your brain surgeon is going to perform a really good job, because you don't want to wait until after you've had brain surgery to find out that the brain surgeon did not know exactly what they were doing. In that case, it is very much life or death. Similar, it's spread through the medical profession. So in the early 20th century, early 1900s, occupational licensing was about 5% of occupations. It was mostly in the medical fields. One of the first places that it was spread was actually talked about by Milton Friedman in a paper. It was the spread from physicians to dentists. And Friedman argued that dentists are not as needing of that verification as potentially your cardiac doctor or your brain surgeon or whomever. And then it began to just proliferate. Mm-hmm. And we kind of see occupations with similar scope spread, or we see it as a reaction to not necessarily tragedy, but possible accidents. We see things like barbers become licensed after outbreaks of what they call barber's itch, which is an infection that you can get from poorly cleaned barber instruments. One of our other Johnson Center alums, Sean Alvarez, has done a paper on the barber's itch and how that is spread through why we see barber licensure. Mm-hmm. But that occupational licensing spreads and spreads and spreads. And some have attributed it to special interests. So if you have a collected group of individuals who want to extract rents from the people around them, if you can get the government to issue a license, then you are going to restrict competition. Some people think of it as just a misinterpreted public safety issue. So things like barbers, you don't want your barber to accidentally cut you and you actually get an infection. Things like funeral directors, you don't want someone to accidentally mistakenly embalm someone or cause an accident in that space. And then in the case of florists, it's Louisiana has a florist license, and that has come through generations and generations of reasoning. So the Louisiana florist license goes back, I believe, to the late 1800s, and it has a little bit of special interest background, but that is currently going to a district court. So we'll see if Louisiana's florist license makes it through the end of 2024.
And then there is another element. If you're one of the practitioners in a field like this, reputation is necessarily collective. And so if there are some people calling themselves, you know, massage therapists, but they're actually sort of like sexual predators or something like that. You don't need but a handful of bad actors could cast a really bad light on others working in this space. And so, you know, you can sort of understand, like, you know, there is some collective interest in this and trying to make sure that people don't bring disgrace or disrepute to your field, even though you yourself are a respected practitioner.
Right, absolutely. So most people would see me as somebody who is anti-occupational licensing, mm-hmm. just based on working on things like this index, working on some papers where I try to point out the overreaching of occupational licensing occasionally. But I see myself as someone who is just advocating for a little bit more of a rational approach to what needs to be licensed. What is the extent of harm that can be done? What is the cost of actually mm-hmm. putting this barrier in place? Because occupational licensing is what we call a barrier to entry. If you want to become a barber and you have to become licensed, that means you have to go to barber's college or a barber school. You have to do an apprenticeship. You have to be able to pay the legitimate cost of the license. You have to pay for your fee. You have to pay, you know, every year to have that license renewed. Those are all some very incredible costs in terms of time. So what ends up happening is with a lot of this licensing, the unseen cost is the cost of people that do not pursue these jobs because they don't have that time or the money or the ability to go to college, to take out a loan to do these specific requirements for this license. And that really hinders economic mobility. Occasionally it hinders physical mobility. People choose not to move to a new state or something because mm-hmm. they can't take their license with them. So we worry about those.
And then there are also, although it's not something we're going to talk about today, there are also some other alternatives to licensing. And you mentioned them in the study, but you're not tracking them, like certification, registration. So, you know, there might be some less onerous alternatives that could still help assure members of the public that somebody who says that they're, like, for instance, a CPA is a certified public accountant, right? And so there are things like certification that could be alternatives.
Right. We say that licensing is the most onerous or the mm-hmm. most strict form of regulation or verification of quality. And the consequences of practicing without a license are the harshest. You can serve actual jail time for practicing without a license. Mm-hmm. So it is incredibly onerous in terms of the cost of what happens if you do not have that verification.
And then the way that these standards get developed usually is that the state allows a board of practitioners to be formed, and then they're going to actually set, like, okay, what do you have to actually do to become a barber? And that's one of the areas where, well, once you're empowering that board, they can always sort of increase those barriers, actually create a barrier as opposed to simply something that would be rationally connected to, okay, if you're going to perform as a professional in this field, what do you actually need to know?
Right. So we have professionals who already have that license mm-hmm. choosing the bar you have to jump over to obtain that license. And so that becomes an ethical question as well. And we've seen cases go to the Supreme Court where professionals have extended the scope of their licenses. The North Carolina dentists decided in 2013 that teeth whitening counted as dentistry. So where everything from these like strip mall teeth whitening companies to they sent cease and desist letters to the companies where you could do the teeth whitening yourself with like the teeth whitening strips. So we see overreach, sometimes mm-hmm. bad actors in that case.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you've put together this index along with Ed Timmons and so let's just talk through a little bit of what you had to do to do this. And you looked at hundreds of occupations, but let's start with what exactly you did to go about construct this index that could be used by economists and other researchers to help study this phenomenon.
Right. So as I mentioned before, states don't necessarily define occupations similarly. We all, colloquially, as individuals, we have an idea of what it means to be a dentist, what it means to be a doctor, what it means to be a barber, massage therapist, florist, etc. The Knee Regulatory Research Center keeps a database on commonly and occasionally not so commonly licensed occupations by the occupation title. So everything from general contractor to fighter timekeeper for boxing and MMA. Using that database, we looked at approximately 330 occupations that are licensed in at least one state, and we wanted to see if a state had a specific license for that, mm-hmm. like a named license for that occupation, or if a state had a license that would bar the practice of that occupation somehow, which is best illustrated by Alabama, in my opinion. Acupuncturists in some states. So if you want to get the needling done for medical purposes, it is a descendant of traditional Chinese medicine. In Alabama, you cannot have an acupuncturist license. You cannot practice acupuncture without being a doctor, without being a physician. So you have to go to medical school, you have to become a doctor, and then you can practice acupuncture. So any acupuncturist that you see in Alabama doing true acupuncture or advertising as acupuncture, you can rest assured that they are doctors. In some states, such as like South Carolina, though, they actually have an acupuncturist license. So instead of going and becoming a doctor, you can get a bachelor's degree in physical therapy, physiology, a little bit of continuing education credits, maybe a special training, and you could become an acupuncturist. So in this case, we see where occupational licensing, another license isn't necessarily a bad thing. So if someone wants to become an acupuncturist in Alabama, it's incredibly costly.
Right.
But it's a little less costly to do so in South Carolina. So we look at just whether or not states have this license specifically and whether or not they have what we call a barrier. So that would be, is barred by something that is not that title. We see this happen with some electrical occupations. So some states have just an electrician license, and that means that you can do any electrician based things. You can run wires, you can do residential, you can do commercial, you can do like heavy machinery electrical work. There are sign electricians. So some states actually have a specific sign electrician license, and some states divvy up more than just electrician. They have a list of different types of electricians, and if you want to be more than one type of electrician, you have to get additional licenses.
Oh, wow.
So in that case, so a state where they would just have an electrician license would only have one named license for electrician, but that's going to bar a lot of these different occupational titles that we have. So we wanted to get an idea of not necessarily just how many titled licenses you have, but how many occupational titles does that stop you from getting into. And so we created this nomenclature of barriers versus licenses. So barriers is a measure of how difficult it is to just get into one of these like licensed occupations. It gives a general overview of how many walls you were putting up, or how many spaces of these 300 occupations, how many are you trying to stop people from just easily getting into? And then licenses gives us an idea of kind of the bureaucratic aspect of it. So more licenses means more boards, means more paperwork. It could mean more just money involved. So you talk about fees and processing. It could talk about just like steps of approval. So the number of total licenses gives us an idea in that space. And so ultimately, we rank the states based on, out of these 330 occupations, how many do you have a barrier for, and how many total licenses do you have for that many barriers?
Right. And these were some of the ones down at the bottom of the list. So these are some professions licensed in just one state. So you get into some pretty specific things that get rolled out here, but it gives you a sense of just exactly how far. I mean, you might already have a guess if it's over 300 different occupations. You're extending pretty broad and pretty far across the economy there.
Right. So we get into some what we call uniquely licensed occupations. One of the features of the index is for every state, we talk about their most uniquely licensed occupation, which is the occupation that state has a license for that is the fewest down or the farthest down the list in terms of total licenses. So things like the lightning protection contractor is licensed in Rhode Island. Rhode Island has a specific electrician-ish license where if you are going to install lightning rods or lightning protection, you must have a license. In a lot of states, that may fall under an unlicensed profession, but Rhode Island has it specifically. Right. We also have things like nutritionist assistant, which is licensed in New Mexico. I believe we're going to rename that one this year. I think they renamed it recently to nutritionist associate. New Mexico cares very much about their nutrition-based occupations. They have dietitian, nutritionist, and nutritionist associate. So they have four different occupations in that space where some states just have nutritionists. Yeah. So we try to illustrate, and the point of these is to show at least legislators in those states, hey, this is something you're doing that no one else is. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, maybe you aren't in the right. Like you're going with the flow. You know, 50 other states are licensing this as well. That's not the worst. Like everybody has the expectation that you might have a license, but if you're Louisiana and you license florists, that's a little odd. So,
well, now then you have to create a numerical index,
right? So because
especially since we as economists like to do statistical analysis or regression analysis, and so you need to have a index. So tell us what you did here.
So we just did a simple normalization. We took the state that is the worst at that thing, quote unquote worst, the state with the most barriers or the most licenses. We do it for each. And then we look at the state that has the least. And so we say on a scale of 0 to 10 or 1 to 10, if you are the one who has the most licenses or the most barriers, we're going to rate you a 10. And if you're the one that is the least, we're going to rate you a 1. Mm-hmm. And then everybody fits on that scale somewhere between 1 and 10. And that way, it also easily communicates kind of where you fall in the pack. Mm-hmm. So if you're falling at a 5, that means you're right in the middle. If you're falling close to 10, that means that you're one of the worst. If you're falling really close to 1, that means you're one of the best. So the idea is just the higher your number, the more barriers or the more licenses you have.
Mm-hmm. And then just to you have some numbers there to illustrate, and you happen to have Alabama, so we can show this here. So Alabama is actually pretty near the top in terms of having the most barriers. To mention, you mentioned it was like 330 different things.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, fortunately, no state licenses all 300.
No state means all 330. I believe Arkansas is our first place as of last year. It was Arkansas, Texas, and then Alabama, I believe, in terms of barriers. So I think Arkansas, of the 330, we have somewhere around 230, 240 barriers. So even in the 330, we're no one's getting close to like 300.
And on the other hand, nobody's less than 147.
Right. So, yeah, there's nobody that isn't licensing.
Yeah.
And there's nobody that's licensing all of these. So we're really talking about on a scale of 147 to 247. There's about 100 barriers of flexibility in there.
And so now we can take a look at which are the states that score the highest, which in this case would be worst if you're thinking, or let's
more.
Put it this way. Yes, they license the most.
Yes.
And the states that license the least.
Yes. So what we found was Arkansas, Texas, and Alabama have the most barriers. So out of all of these different occupations, there is something stopping you from practicing them.
Mm-hmm.
Our friends in Arkansas, the Arkansas Center for Research and Economics, took a really, really big interest in this, and they've helped us delve into what some of these barriers are looking like and why Arkansas is listed as number one. One thing that we found interesting about this is these are states, you know, these top five, Arkansas, Texas, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Washington, well, at least like those top four, we think of these as like very like economically liberal states. These are promoting like personal freedoms. Mm-hmm. These are traditionally more economically liberal states. These are places that you wouldn't necessarily expect this type of behavior. Whereas states that when I ask people, they think New York, California, like more regulatory heavy states generally. Which end up, I think California falls at number 11. New York falls a lot closer to the middle of the pack, somewhere between 25 and 30. It's a little unusual because these are kind of like unseen costs, or these are things that people don't usually actively think about. When we say, you know, more than 20% of the U.S. workforce has an occupational license, that means that someone you know has a license for their occupation. I did a trip with some students yesterday, and they were talking to some insurance brokers. They are licensed. Your barber is licensed. Your massage therapist is licensed. Your dentist is licensed. If you are going into a professional work environment, chances are there is a license somewhere in that building. So they tend to be unseen. And so we were a little surprised to find that states that we think of as a lot more personal freedom based have kind of these high barriers. And these states that have low scores, Kansas being our lowest scoring, our 50th or 51st place, we include Washington, D.C., are these spaces that they're not necessarily like stand out in terms of their political environments or necessarily their regulatory environments. These are places that just kind of show up as more neutral.
And then we can talk a little bit about, you also have state profiles. And so we've already seen that the Alabama ranks third. We are the third in terms of most licensed state. But tell us a little bit more about our licensing.
Right. So we have state profiles for every state. The key to that is we want a one-page piece of paper that anyone could take to their state legislature and say, this is what our occupational licensing environment looks like. Compared to our region, compared to nationally, how bad are we on a scale of 1 to 10? Who is our competitors in this space? Who can we do better than? How are we compared to our neighbors? And Alabama is kind of an interesting one. So we are the worst in the East-South Central census region. We are third overall. Competing with Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, and Washington. So Oklahoma and Washington are doing slightly better than us. Texas and Arkansas are doing slightly worse and doing the worst in terms of most barriers. But Alabama's occupational licensing environment is a little interesting because we have so many barriers, but not necessarily that many licenses. Our licensing score being close to 8 is high, but what happens is we have very broad scope of all of these different licenses. Like I said, you can't be an acupuncturist in Alabama without being a doctor. So that physician license is barring a lot of different occupations. And that's kind of what we're seeing in Alabama, is not necessarily many, many unique licenses. We're just seeing really broad scope to them. Okay. So one idea of having this kind of deviation is we can get an idea of if there was a new occupation to come up for licensing, state started licensing something new. One thing we've seen in this most recent edition that we were looking at for the 2024 publication is states are starting to license sign language interpreters. With this difference in barriers and licenses, it's likely that we can kind of predict whether or not a state is going to issue a new license or just kind of cover those actions or those processes of that job under an already existing license. So perhaps maybe sign language interpreter is more likely to be incorporated into a license that we already have, and we're just going to put a barrier to it.
And so then what's our most unusual?
Okay, so our most unusual is what we call a drama movement therapist, and lead abatement contractors.
Okay.
That one always gets me. So the drama movement therapist occupation is a more recent addition to the occupational licensing environment in the U.S. These are people who are working through therapy through kind of the physical aspect. These aren't physical therapists. These are more counselors, like the mental, physical side. And it's about play therapy. It's about moving. It's not your traditional Freudian sit on the couch and talk about your feelings kind of therapy. It is a little bit more about movement. And what we suspect is this has pushed us into a space where the word therapist that gets us in that like licensing space. So we think medical.
Well, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about this here today. And thank you all for joining us. Join us again next time for another eConversations.
This has been eConversations, a joint production of Troy Trojan Vision and the Manuel H. Johnson Center for Political Economy at Troy University.
Support for the Double Dome podcast comes from the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University, where students become geeks, an acronym for globally aware, ethical decision makers, engaged with the business community, knowledgeable to compete, and successful in business and life. More information at troy.edu/business.